Lillard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. FP and Grandy in for Willard today alongside Dan Dibley, as always, here on 95.7 The Game with you until 6 o'clock. We are now 23 hours away from the trade deadline across Major League Baseball this year. We'll keep you up to date on all the news. A minor trade just came down while we were at break. The Cleveland Guardians are finalizing a deal to acquire outfielder Lane Thomas from the Washington Nationals for a prospect haul going back to Washington. But Lane Thomas, the Nationals outfielder, headed to the Cleveland Guardians. Cleveland certainly a contender. They're also a team that's been linked to starting pitchers. One of the biggest prizes of the starting pitcher market is Blake Snell. Who knows if he's really available or not? If you missed it, an hour ago we were catching up with Ned Colletti, former assistant GM of the Giants, former GM of the Dodgers. He was telling us that at this point of the whole deadline process, GMs across the league and president of baseball operations are just kind of bluffing, and who knows if someone's really available or if they're not, or if they're just gauging interest or whatever the case may be. And ultimately you'll find out an hour before the deadline comes. But Blake Snell is a name to watch across the league in terms of the starting pitching market. And guys, one of the reasons why, as a Giants fan, I would be so tempted to diving headfirst into, and I know, FP, you hate me using the phrase, into sell mode, is just because there's so few sellers out there. It is a truly, truly a seller's market. And if you just threw out someone like Blake Snell out there, you might have six, seven, eight teams who are interested, and you might be able to get teams into a bit of a bidding war form, and you might be able to capitalize off of that. I know it's not quite as simple as just deciding to buy or deciding to sell. But in a market that is very, very lacking starting pitchers, a team on the fringe to decide to include one of their starting pitchers in there, it might ultimately help you out in the long run. You never know.
I don't hate that take. I mean, if you can't hang up the phone, you trust your decision makers and you trust your scouts, and you can't hang up the phone on a deal for Blake Snell that makes you better for the next 3 or 4 years, that changes the dynamic and the course and the trajectory of your entire organization based on having him for another couple of months and flirting with a third wild card. I don't hate that idea. It would have to be something that was absolutely incredible, like Ned Colletti was talking about. But I don't hate that idea. I would never say Blake Snell's not tradable. Don't trade Blake Snell. His value's the highest right now, and we all knew how the real estate market was a couple of years ago. And if you ask over asking price for my house, and it's on the market for $1 million, and you give me 1.5 or 1.6, and there's a bidding war for my house, and maybe I wouldn't have sold it, I'm just throwing it on the market to see, and my friend's a realtor, and we're doing this whole song and dance thing, and I get a bidding war for my house, I'm selling my house.
But you got to live somewhere, and you know, so then you're going to end up trying to find another house. And right now, if you're the Giants and you have Blake Snell, and you trade Blake Snell for something that's not a good starting pitcher, well, then what are you doing?
You got lots
the rest of the year.
You got a lot of starting pitchers, though.
Yeah, but
you don't
have
Birdsong. You
got
Alex Cobb.
You guys are talking about it. Blake Snell is maybe the best pitcher in baseball right now, and you are three and a half
out. For four starts. And I know he's got resume.
His resume, July, August, September, is that he's always this good, and he's been unbelievably filthy, and yet you're going to tell your fan base that has been waiting all year for you to go on some sort of a run, and you've won four in a row, and you feel like you're back in the race. Not that you ever fell out of it, but now you're climbing up the wild card race, and you're going to tell your fan base, yeah, just kidding, we're going to get rid of our best pitcher.
Well, it depends for who and with what team.
Right.
Like, at the risk of overexposing myself here and maybe sounding stupider than I normally sound, And I hate to play GM because I'm not. These guys live it. So it's easy to come on a radio show for 3 or 4 hours and talk about it. And living it and getting up in the morning and being on the phone all day is totally different. But if I were the president of baseball operations or a GM for the Giants, I would say everybody's available. Every player on my team, I don't have an untouchable. And let me see what you got. Pulling the trigger on it's a different story.
That's make an offer. I'll see if I like it or not.
I'm talking about everybody.
Yeah.
I'm talking about people you wouldn't think about. Everybody's on the table for the right offer.
You're talking about Logan Webb and Patrick Bailey and Elliot Ramos.
Absolutely. Everybody's on the table. And let me see what you got. If your need is this, what are you going to give me in return? Why wouldn't you entertain that?
I mean, technically, everybody has a price.
Everybody has a price. You want Webb? Let me see what you got. I'm not saying I would trade Logan Webb. I damn sure want to hear what you got for him. You want Patrick Bailey? Let me see what you got. I'm just throwing those out there, just anybody. And then I pull back. No, I'm not going to trade Bailey. So, like, I like him. He's going to be an all-star someday. Or Webby's just going through a little funk in July, whatever that is. But I'm just saying, like, if I were a GM of any team that was in the wild card race, in the hunt, like, I'm not trading. I'm talking about the Phillies and the Yankees and, you know, the teams, the upper echelon teams. No, I'm talking about if I'm chasing that, everybody's on the table, dude. Everybody. And let's just see where it goes.
I think to your point, though, Dibs, and I know, you know, making a decision based on how the fan base reacts is one thing, but trading away Blake Snell to me signals that you're kind of done for this season, because as we've seen for the last month, Blake Snell has been absolutely incredible, although he still doesn't have a win, which is wild. In those games that he started and pitched incredibly well in, the offense has been nowhere to be found, but he's still been incredible. His most recent start, game one of the doubleheader on Saturday, 6 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 15 strikeouts and 2 walks. First pitcher in Major League history with 15 or more strikeouts in 6 or fewer innings. He got 18 outs. 15 of them were via the strikeout.
Because no other pitcher came out of the game after 6 innings with 15 strikeouts.
Normally, exactly.
Of course that's going to be
seven,
a record.
7, 8, or 9.
I'm going for the record. I'm throwing 135 pitches and try to strike out 21.
Yeah,
Just saying.
Let me beat Kerry Wood's record. Let me go here for 20-plus. But Snell had 15 strikeouts in 6 innings. He was one shy of the Giants' record, and he joined this group of Giants pitchers with 15 or more strikeouts in a single outing. Tim Lincecum, Jason Schmidt, Gaylord Perry, Carl Hubbell, and Christy Mathewson. That's pretty good company.
That's great company.
They did it in 9 innings.
Yes.
Though.
He did it in 6 innings.
At least go out there for the 7th, and if you get the 18 and maybe like 12 or 15 or 17 or 20 pitches, now you're up to 123.
That's kind of how Snell is,
now you're at 18.
I mean, he rarely goes into
the 7th. You strike out the side in the 7th, you got to 18, and now you need 3 more in the 7th? You know, you've been the 8th, you need 3 more for the record?
Even
you got 2 innings to get 3 strikeouts, and you go 140 pitches.
Trade him. Pull out his arm and then trade him.
Trade him. It's just, there was a huge part of me that wanted him to keep going. I was just like, I know it's 100 pitches. I know he's ramping up. I know he's had injuries, but damn it. Those days don't come around very often.
Ever.
Obviously, these stats we're talking
What's
about.
It like being a fielder in a game like that when you're
it's
thinking,
hard.
You just get bored?
Exactly. It's hard.
I mean, how do you stay sharp where
it's hard.
Like three batters put the ball in play and got out? The other 15 didn't even put it in play.
Two hits. So 5 players over 6 innings put the ball in play.
Right.
I played center field behind Pedro Martinez when he won his first Cy Young. And there was games when I would just like looking around and just, and then crack
daydream.
Because he's striking out everybody. You're like, I would joke like, we don't even need our gloves tonight. It's a gloves optional start. Pedro's pitching. And then you're out there and it's hard. Because if you have like Kurt Reeder, pitches to contact. You're getting action. You're in the infield. You get lots of ground balls.
He works quick.
Let's go. We're making plays. Like, boop, boop, boop. Strike three. Strike three. Strike three. Strike three. Strike three. Crack. Oh.
Yeah.
You're ready, but you're not ready.
Were you ever on the field for a no-hitter or somebody who got close?
In college, never in the big leagues.
Yeah. And you start to like really think about, oh God.
I was playing shortstop.
You know, I better not mess this up.
Exactly.
Shortstop at University of Miami with a perfect game, Alex Fernandez.
Wow.
A perfect game is a different story.
Right.
Because you can screw up the perfect game.
Yes.
For the guy on the mound.
If it's a no-hitter, I can make an error all I want.
Yeah,
who cares?
Exactly, right? I can play it into an error to make sure it's still a no-hitter. You know, like sit back on it and give it the Olay, like, oh,
dang it.
That one ate me up.
Give me an error. But a perfect game, you got to be perfect too. And that was a whole new level. I mean, it was college, so it wasn't even the big leagues. I can't imagine. Like, even those routine ground balls for the 27th out on a perfect game, and you're just watching them going like, I love defense. That was my passion. And you're just wondering, like, Would I have made that play? Like, I don't know.
The Joaquin Arias play from D3rd and Matt Cain's perfect game.
When he slipped out, his back foot slipped out, and then he still had enough cannon to, like, flat-footed
and
falling backwards.
Perfect throw across the diamond.
I don't... That play boggles me. As soon as he slipped, I'm like, there goes a perfect game.
We remember the Gregor Blanco diving catch in Triples Alley, but right. We forget the final out, which is not an easy play.
It's a better play. Based on his footing, that was a better play. And the way he went for that ball, because he made sure, right? He didn't go backhand and gamble.
Well, and I'm sure, I don't remember exactly the starting lineup that day, but I'm sure that Pablo was the starting third baseman that day, and they brought Joaquin Arias in as a defensive replacement. So imagine you're coming cold off the bench into a perfect game. The only reason you're in is to preserve a perfect game. You're up like 12-0. The game's over. I'm sure the nerves are just incredible at a moment like that. But
I can't imagine.
Yeah. Blake Snell has been incredible the last month, and there are reports that a number of teams have checked in with the Giants on Blake Snell's availability. And according to Ken Rosenthal, there's like 10 teams that are interested in showing interest in starting pitchers. The Yankees, the Orioles, the Red Sox, the Guardians, the Astros, the Mets, the Braves, the Brewers, the Padres, and the Dodgers. Can you find a desperate team that's willing to give you quite a haul for Blake Snell? What's interesting and maybe a little frustrating for me, and you guys can tell me if I'm overreacting, and FP, you and I were talking about this off the air. John Heyman earlier today reported that the Giants, at least for now, are suggesting that they're unwilling to pay down Blake Snell's deal, which essentially means they're unwilling to include any money in a trade, in a potential trade of Blake Snell, which kind of limits the number of teams that are able to acquire Blake Snell or financially would be willing to take on potentially a $30 million player option next year. And it kind of drives down his market a little bit. And if there's a team out there that's willing to do it, say the Mets, who are now going to be on the hook for the entire Blake Snell contract, they could go back to the bargaining table with Farhan and say, well, since we're paying for the whole deal, Farhan, we're not going to give you three prospects, we'll give you just two. Or we're not going to give you our number five prospect, we'll give you our number 12 prospect, or whatever the case is. If this is true, guys, and maybe it's not, I know FP, you think, you know, whatever all these reporters are reporting, it's, we don't got to take it to be true. It might not be true. But if it is true, that to me is really frustrating as a Giants fan, because it's telling me that the Giants are interested in saving as much money as they possibly can and not in trying to get the most return back for a potential stud pitcher. And it's frustrating because it feels like the balance that we've been fighting as a Giants fan for a really long time, an organization that maybe is more interested in their bottom line than going out there and trying to either put the best team on the field or to get the most you can in return for one of your better players.
He's only got $5 million left on his contract this year.
This is it, potentially if he opts into his deal for next year.
So that's Giants, $30 million next year. So you're going to pay $35 million for Blake Snell.
Yes.
For a year and a half.
Potentially.
I don't think that's a deal breaker. It's $15 million this year with $17 million in bonus. The bonus is you can't touch that. So he's got $17 million in his bonus. That's where the 32 comes in this year. So it was kind of deferred. The $17 million of bonus, he's getting paid 15. So a third of the season left, that's $5 million. And then $30 million next year. So you're getting Blake Snell for a year and 2 months for $35 million.
But if you're the Giants, isn't it worth it to say, all right, we'll help you foot some of the bill if it means you're getting us more back? It seems like they're more worried about saving a little bit of money as opposed to maximizing a potential return for Blake Snell.
I believe John Heyman's tweets as much as I believe. I don't even have a good analogy. So I don't know if that's true or not. And I'm not
That's an Odyssey Baseball Insider, John Heyman.
That's arson judge, John Heyman.
Yeah. Well, you know. Accidents happen.
I like John. He's a nice guy, but you see some of these guys and what they tweet, and you know, they hear one thing from an agent one place, and then they go fire it on Twitter, and then next thing you know, people are talking about it, and it does. It shifts the market. I think you have to be super responsible and careful what you tweet around this time, but I don't think responsible and careful in Twitter have ever been mentioned in the same breath.
Well, and also when it comes to just general journalism, because you know, you say something or you have something that gets reported and it gets picked up and aggregated, and next thing you know, it becomes, you know, spread across the whole country and people will take it as fact even though it's not.
It just says San Francisco is suggesting for now, that doesn't mean if the right deal's on the table, that it is, quote, unwilling to take on some of Blake Snell's salary and deal ahead of 24. Who in San Francisco is suggesting? Like, give me a source. Like, who said that? You just can just say, like, Los Angeles, the whole city of San Francisco is suggesting for now that it's unwilling to take on. Like, who is it? Like, if you're going to come out with that, tell me who it is. Is it Farhan? Who said that? Was it the owner?
Probably some other Johnson, some like, other team is telling him their negotiations with the Giants is going this way. They're unwilling to pay any of Blake Snell's money.
And that other team can make that up in order to get leverage on the deal.
Potentially. Or the Giants, that could be honest and truthful, but maybe the Giants don't mean it and it's all part of their process. If you missed the Ned Coletti interview from an hour and a half ago, just about, give it a listen on the free Odyssey app. Use the rewind feature. Visit our YouTube page, because it seems like all these GMs at this stage, guys, are just playing 4D chess and they're trying to outmaneuver each other at this point.
Of course.
And then kind of all, you know, you're going to make a call eventually. I call you. You got to show your cards. And that time comes 22 hours from now when we'd be only 40 minutes away from the trade deadline. And that's when deals get done and the pressure is on and you finally see what these guys are made of. But until then, you don't know which way is up, which way is down, which way is left, which way is right, because you got so many guys and misinformation spewing back and forth and guys that are holding their cards close to their chest and you don't know what is right and what is wrong. But it does seem, in my opinion, if that is true and the Giants are unwilling to pay any of Blake Snell's contract, they are just absolutely damaging the market for Blake Snell, because it makes it very difficult for any team, unless you're Steve Cohen, who is willing to pay exorbitant amounts to field a competent baseball team. There's few other teams out there that would be willing to sign up for that.
This is such a vague general statement, dude. It depends on the team you're dealing with. If it's the Yankees, $5 million is not going to sway the deal. If it's the Orioles, who are a smaller market team, it is. This is just a blanket statement. If you're dealing with big market teams that have a lot of money, the money doesn't matter. So that's why unwilling to pay down Snell's contract, and this is a headline right now. It depends. This is a case-by-case basis who you're dealing with. Are you dealing with a rich dude? You're dealing with a poor dude? You're dealing with an in-between dude? Like, who are you dealing with right now? And then that determines on if the deal gets done and what prospects and what players are coming back. And if the players are coming back and there's sick players that I want and $5 million is holding up the deal or whatever it is, then yeah, who cares? Giants got money. Don't think they don't. The Giants have cash. They got a lot of money, even though they've spent a lot of money. So I don't think money's a factor with the San Francisco Giants. The one thing you can say about the Giants, well, there's a bunch of things you can say about them. The one thing you can't say is that they're cheap. They're not cheap. They spent $300 million this offseason. They went out and signed a bunch of players. Whether you agree with the players they signed, whether you agree with how they're performing, that's your prerogative as a fan. But this isn't a small market team. They're not trying to cut corners. So that's why this headline means nothing to me.
I mean, like you said, you don't know if it means anything until you confront a team and see exactly what they want to offer. And Grandy, you said it earlier that it might affect what you get back based on your willingness to pay down some of the deal or not. It might affect what you get in exchange for Blake Snell. I'd think about the philosophical approach of even talking about trading your best pitcher when you're a team that's won 4 in a row and you've got a National League wild card race that looks pretty wide open. The Atlanta Braves are a team that is racked with injuries, and I don't think that they're a team that's that overwhelming. And I look at what the Giants have with their pitching, and I don't know why you would even consider trading Blake Snell, even if you want to get something for him. And you don't know if he wants to opt in for next year or not. My assumption would be that he would opt in, but if he pitches great the rest of the year, maybe he wants to opt out and go somewhere else and get a longer-term deal, and so that's the risk you'd have to take.
Yeah, maybe. Let's go back out to the phone lines here on Willard and Dibs. It's FP and Grandy in for Willard alongside Dibs, as always, on Willard and Dibs, 888-957-9570. Up next is Mark in Danville. Mark, what's up? You're on Willard and Dibs. How you doing, Mark?
I'm great. How are you guys? Hey, no offense, Dibs. This is more of a FP question, and if I need some like tennis input, I might like ask you. But FP, this was probably 2004. I don't know if you remember this. You came up to Tahoe with Adam Pyatt and someone else to play golf at Coyote Moon. Did that ring a bell?
Possibly for the All-Star break? I don't know.
Yeah, during the break. It was you and Pyatt and one other dude.
Eric
I can't
Burns.
Remember who it was.
It was Eric Burns.
Yes, Burnsy.
What are we doing?
Burnsy.
What are you talking about? Was it?
So I was in the pro shop, and I'm like, hey, I'm checking you in, and even Dibs can dig this. He's a golfer. And I'm like, hey, you guys are only three. Can I join you? And I joined you, and we had the best time ever. And you borrowed my golf shoes. I'm like, okay, that's kind of weird, but okay. Anyways.
Did we play strip golf?
No, we did not.
If you lose the hole, you got to take off a piece of clothes. It's fun. You got to try it sometime.
But you, Burns, and Pyatt were at each other's throats every single shot, and I loved it. It was some adult language there, but it was pretty funny and super enjoyable. And again, the point here was, you were talking about, so my son, his name is Easton, of course, baseball player. And you had mentioned how a 92-mile fastball from a 95 was not just 3 miles an hour. It's like exponential from like an earthquake. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it's feet per second. So the difference between like 95 and 98 is incredible.
It's not just three. Yeah. So I tell that story all the time because I coach as a league team, and I still remember that story. Like, it doesn't make sense. But in reality, when you talk about with earthquakes, it does, right? Like, it's an exponential reality.
Yeah, there was a 5-1, I think, in maybe Gilroy today or somewhere. No, not Gilroy. Southern California, they downgraded to a 4-9. So the difference between a 4-9 and a 5-1 is pretty big.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Fun memories playing golf up in Tahoe with Burnsy.
Yeah, that was great.
Technically, it's Truckee, but same ballpark.
2004.
That par 3 that's about 160 feet downhill.
Dude, is there something great about golfing in Tahoe that it's just like you swing easier because of the elevation? And then you're hitting your 7-iron like 190 yards.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. We just went up to Truckee for a little tourney in Reno.
It makes you feel like a badass.
It does. Yeah, especially on those warm summer days when it's 90 degrees and the ball travels even further.
And there's something to be said for swinging easy, right? Like, I never overswing when I play in Tahoe. It's just nice and easy and the ball jumps. I've played in Denver a few times.
Nice
and easy. Yep. The ball jumps. It's great. It's like a 2-club difference, right?
Just about.
Yeah.
That's what made Hayden Birdsong, what he did in Coors, that much more impressive. How is his curveball? Were you at that series?
I was. I was calling the game and
Coors.
I was on the air saying, curveballs don't break here. Daryl Kyle signed a huge contract with the Rockies.
Daryl Kyle.
And his curveball
rest
spun.
In peace.
Mike Hampton signed a huge contract with the Rockies. He had a nasty curveball, left-hander, just spun.
Did not work
and
in
Hayden
Coors.
Hayden Birdsong's 22 and just spinning the hell out
he
of it.
He looks like he's 14.
And he's spinning the hell. He's got so much swagger and confidence. I love that dude. If he gets sent back to the minors, I'm going to be bummed.
Like, I think Giants fans across the board will be there.
I was bummed last time, and I thought, oh, this is just a technical move. But like, to go to San Jose after you strike out 12 at Coors Field and not get to go to Dodger Stadium and soak that in a little bit and just kind of revel in it. I mean, it worked out fine. He pitched great yesterday, but I hope he's here to stay. I really like the guy. I like everything about him.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about how he talks to himself on the mound, and you kind of it honestly reminds me, and it's not Max Scherzer always would mutter to himself, and maybe he's directing it towards the batter, and there's expletives all over the place. I feel like Birdsong is a little bit more to himself to kind of amp himself up, and that's what Max is doing as well. Max is more directed elsewhere, but it's just to himself and to get him going. But watching Birdsong talk to himself on the bump, it does kind of remind me of Mad Max.
He threw a curveball yesterday, and we already talked about it once, where he just said, "That was awesome," and he was like, "F yeah!" And you could read his lips. He was digging himself. Scherzer was a psycho, man. Like, 4 days he didn't pitch. Funnest guy ever. Like, a goofy guy playing jokes, but he would put his headphones on his locker the day he pitched. And he, right when he put his headphones on, he would look to whoever was right or left, and he'd go, "See you on the other side." And he would just lock in, dude, and just be just a
maniac.
I'm going to kill people.
And then would go strike out 13 over 8 innings.
And then the other 4 days, greatest guy in the world. Yeah. See you on the other side.
That's so wild. Oh, man. All right, time for a break here on Willard and Dibs. It's FP and Grandy in for Willard. Dibs here, as always, on 95.7 The Game. We are sponsored by Express Employment Professionals. More coming up on the other side. What should the Giants do at the deadline? 888-957-9570. Richie and Austin, we're coming to you on the other side. So hang out through the break. More Willard and Dibs coming up next on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
I tell you what, this is one of the most perfect ways to end a sunny, glorious day. Getting a chance to talk to Mr. Mark and Dan. You know what I'm saying? It was pretty, pretty cool.
On 95.7 The Game.
That was the great Sergio Romo talking with Mark Willard and Dan Dibley. Willard off this week, enjoying some vacation time with family in Hawaii. FP Santangelo in. I'm in. My name is Mark Grandy, along with Dan Dibley, of course, here on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game, talking through MLB MLB trade deadline. We're now, what, 22 and a half hours away from the trade deadline tomorrow at 3 o'clock Pacific time. We'll be on the air, of course, 2 to 6 every day here on 95.7 The Game. We'll be on the air when the trade deadline comes and goes. We'll keep it locked to 95.7 The Game for all your MLB trade deadline talks and drama and news. We've got it here for you on 95.7 The Game. We will get back to Giants stuff, what they do at the deadline. Are they going to buy? Are they going to sell? Are they going to do some of both? Where's Blake Snell go? What about Matt Chapman? What about some relievers? Doval, Taylor Rogers is the name I've heard thrown around out there. What about your corner outfielders, Yastrzemski and Conforto? We can get to all of that, and we'll take your calls coming up here in just a second. 888-957-9570. But guys, we have MLB Network on here in the studio, and during the break, you guys were watching a highlight package from the Baltimore Orioles win earlier today. And their catcher, James McCann, in his first at-bat of the game, was hit in the nose with like a 95-mile-an-hour fastball and stayed in the game. He stayed in the game, and he finished catching the rest of the game. And you look at him after the game, he's got a broken nose, it looks like. His nose and his eye is completely swollen up. He stayed in the game and caught a full nine innings after getting hit in the nose with a fastball.
He's got double cotton swabs in both nostrils that are all bloody.
My God.
So, like, it looks like
he just got done in a, like, fighting Mike Tyson or something.
I think I'm getting soft in my old age. Normally, I mean, this is a, what a badass move.
I'm thinking
when you get hit in the face with 95 that there can be some like cerebral bleeding. And the fact that he stayed in the game, there's a lot of criticism online for him staying in the game. He's a badass. Baseball players don't get enough recognition for being tough. It's usually hockey players and football players, but most baseball players are tough. And that goes back to the whole Buck Showalter. I guarantee you James McCann played high school
football.
I guarantee. We can look it up. He played high school football. But man, he looks like Rocky in Rocky 1. Like at the end where he's like, Mick, cut me. I can't see.
Cut me, Mick.
He looks like, I just watched that the other day. By the way, that's such a good movie. I haven't seen it in like 10 years.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's good.
I mean, beyond the boxing part of it, just a good character story. But for McCann, you take fastball in the face and, you know, if you're okay to play, keep playing, kid. Rub some dirt on it. And he did. And he stood up and his nose was absolutely gushing, and he took his base.
If that were like Little League, high school, or maybe even college, somebody would lose their job.
For sure.
For him staying.
Oh, no doubt.
The parents on Facebook would go nuts. Like, what are you doing with my son? He got hit in the face. And there's something to that, man. I hope he's okay. It wasn't like he got grazed. There was some people saying he should have got up and pumped his fist three times and said, fight, 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 after he got hit in the face.
Oh, God.
Taking it to that level. But that is a badass move. I can't deny that. But I'm just wondering, like, you're catching with one eye, dude.
Yeah, I don't know how.
Catching with one eye, you're hitting with one eye. I don't know if there's internal bleeding there. Like,
hitting a baseball is hard enough with two eyes. Doing it with one eye and a broken nose seems incredibly difficult. And then, yeah, I mean, there could be broken like bones, broken facial bones, broken skull. Like you never know what could go on with a 95 mile an hour fastball hits you in that spot. You could have damage to your eye, like legitimate damage, more than just it's swelling up on you. You could be concussed. I'm sure they ran him through a couple of quick tests in the dugout between innings, but staying in and playing nine, like there was the moment earlier in the season where Patrick Bailey took a foul ball off his face mask or whatever. He stayed in the game for another couple of innings. Then he started feeling the effects of the concussion. And you see that sometimes where a guy takes a blow and then stays in for an inning, then he gets pulled out later. He finished the game. Nine full innings he caught after getting hit in the nose.
Yeah, got a hit too later in the game. He wound up going 1 for 3, and he drove in a run with that pitch hit him in the face. Bases were loaded and part of the four run first.
The toughest RBI ever.
Really tough. But to be able to get back in the box and deliver with the hit, and yeah, you're right, FP. I mean, forget just playing left field after that happens. You got to put the mask on and yeah, you're catching with, you know, I'm sure you could see out of both his eyes, but the amount of pain that he was in, for sure.
There's concussion protocol, so I'm sure that was applied multiple times over multiple innings. There's certain questions that trainers ask the player, and if they answer them correctly or incorrectly, they're either in the game or out of the game.
Yeah, wild.
I'm sure he answered them all correctly because, boy, if you get a chance when you get home,
just look at the pictures of it.
Oof.
Yeah.
Ooh. He looks like he got hit in the face with a 95-mile-an-hour fastball.
Yeah, it checks
out. A glancing blow.
This got his
just ear. But a flesh wound.
Just got his ear. Exactly.
All right, 888-957-9570. Tomorrow is the MLB trade deadline, and we're breaking down every angle of it here on Willard and Dibs. FP and Mark Grandy in for Willard, along with Dan Dibley here on 95.7 The Game. Let's go back out to the phone lines. What should the Giants do? What should Farhan do? Is Farhan fighting for his life? Does that mean he's a little more willing, perhaps, to take a big swing and try to get a big fish in here? Or are the Giants going to do what they've done for the vast majority of their deadlines, maybe a move or two on the margins, but they're relatively just going to stand pat? 888-957-9570. Up next is Richie in Queens. What's up, Richie? You're on 95.7 The Game. How you doing?
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're doing well, Richie. What should the Giants do tomorrow?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, they're on the fence at this point. By the way, getting back to McCann, he can play a little hockey. That's what hockey players do. I mean, I'm shocked that they let him stay in. He's a catcher. His eyes are blackened. You don't know what I'm really amazed at that. I go watching for 70 years. I don't think I've ever seen something like that.
What if he took a foul tip off his face after that? Like, what if he got a straight foul back in his
mask?
That
would hurt. Yeah.
They say how soft the baseball players are. Well, he just proved the point and said, hey, I got hit with a fastball 95 and I'm still in the game. God bless him. I hope he's okay. Hey, look, you know, I tried to call this morning. I'm on the fence here and so is Farhan. Because, you know, his job's in jeopardy at this point. And when you look at their staff right now, potentially they have the best five starters in baseball. They really do. If Snell, I mean, Webb all of a sudden went from a 1 to a 3 if you're going to be behind these two guys. And Webb is taking a step back. But Harrison's playing great as a 5. And Birdsong looks like a real top pitcher. So you've got Robbie Ray and Snell and Webb. They're 4 games out. You know, I guess maybe Sunday we're talking to guys this morning. We're talking about maybe getting Guerrero. You know, Guerrero's got a contract, so I guess you'd have to give up some of your young guys. But I've learned through the years, prospects are what they are. I know Kelnick was a guy, 5'2 player 5 years ago when the Mets gave him up, and he's turned out to be okay, nothing special. So I think they're going to stand pat. I really do. And they got Snell and they got Robbie Ray for 1 year, knowing that they could opt out. So at this point, to start selling when 4 games with 58 to go, and in a week you could pick up 3 games, and all of a sudden you want out. I think they're gonna stand pat at this point. I'd like to get another bat. I don't know how real Fitzgerald is. He's been a real find, and then to give up Bailey. I mean, all of a sudden you've been looking for a catcher for Vince Posey, and now you're going to give him up. And next year you're going to do the same thing and go for 1 year contract. I think at this point, stick with it. I think them winning 4 games, you know, if they had lost 3 out of 4 and they'd be 7 out, then there'd be no question. But the fact that they're right there 3.5 games out, I think they're going to stick with their guns, guys, and maybe pick up a first baseman because they're getting nothing at first base at this point. I love Wade, but there's no power, so. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I think I'd stick with what I got.
Yeah, I like that call. I like everything about that call. It's well thought out. He's making some good points. Like I said, I'm not going to be upset if nothing is done.
I think
a lot of Giants fans would be, though. Yeah, I'm in the extreme minority here.
He might be reacting to you saying, I think if you're the GM of the Giants, you're making everybody available. You're taking calls on everybody. I don't think anyone in their right mind is considering trading Patrick Bailey.
No.
I don't think you have to worry about that, Richie. But if I were to ask you guys, what's more likely? The Giants go out and make a big move to bring someone big in. They trade one of their better players, make it Snell or Chapman, or they don't make a big move, they don't trade away one of those big guys, or they generally just stand pat. I think the most likely outcome is they stand pat, right?
Agreed, and I think the next most likely move would be to trade one of your bigger name guys, and your third most likely, I think, option would be to go out and acquire somebody, a big name guy. I just don't think that you're in a spot where you're looking to make that addition, and I also am kind of like Richie in that you're better off, in my opinion, of just standing pat. I think you have enough to make a push for that third wild card, and the assets that you do have are those ones that you want to keep.
So what if, okay, you stand pat, generally speaking, maybe you make a move or two on the margins, but nothing crazy. You don't really change the roster all that much. So you keep Snell, you keep Ray, Cobb comes back, all this, Chapman, you know, you keep him. all the guys that have options, you're not trading them away. You're keeping all these guys. And then say Snell opts out. First of all, let's say you miss the playoffs. Snell opts out. Chapman opts out. Ray, I would imagine Robbie Ray is probably the most likely to opt in. I'm not exactly sure what his market would be like, only making a handful of starts coming off of 16-month recovery off of Tommy John. I would imagine Ray likely opts in. So let's say he opts in and you have him back for next year as well. But you lose Snell, you lose Chapman, and you miss a postseason berth. We're going to be looking back on the trade deadline where you did not go out and make a move and get something back, recoup some value for those quality, valuable players, and you didn't get anything back for them and you missed the playoffs anyway. We're going to be looking back on this moment as a mistake. But again, that's just the risk you run when you're being a GM, I suppose. But
that's a crappy scenario.
If it doesn't work out.
if we
let's not pretend like it's that wild. I mean, you could easily miss the playoffs, and I think we're all expecting Snell to opt out, I would imagine, assuming that he pitches at least halfway decent the rest of the year.
Why?
Because he wants to make more money.
Why can't he make more money here?
Okay, well, maybe...
Why can't they sign him to a deal here?
Might be able to.
Why can't Chapman stay here? Because he likes the manager so much. Snell likes the manager so much. What about that scenario? What if they do make the playoffs? And they do stand pat.
Well, if they love it here so much, you should trade them away, getting something back for them, and then re-sign them afterward.
That's what everybody says, right? That never happens, ever. Juan Soto got traded to the Padres, all the National fans were like, that's okay, we'll get him right back. Max Scherzer got traded, we'll get him right. That doesn't work that way.
Did Aroldis Chapman did that once with the Cubs?
Yeah.
Went to the Yankees or something? He's been everywhere. But.
This is Tommy Pham, by the way, just this ADD, seventh team in 4 years. This is his seventh team. He got traded.
In four years.
I mean, that means he's valuable enough to get traded.
But not valuable enough to stay somewhere.
Well, guy who probably wears out his welcome.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything about him other than he slapped Jock Peterson.
And just plays on teams that aren't great and aren't trying to hold on to their veteran pieces on a team that's very, very bad, like the White Sox, who's willing to move any and every veteran that they have.
Like, I'm thinking of everybody in the big leagues right now, and he scares me more than anybody.
Tommy
Pham? Yeah, he's just scary. He's scary. Like, that would be a dude I would not mess with on the other team. He just kind of seems like a badass. I mean, in a good way for his teammates, but like on the other side, I'm just like, okay, Mr. Pham, do your thing.
Yeah, good for his teammates.
I have changed. In my 30s, I would have tried to kick his ass. But like now, it's just like, I don't know. He just seems like he's scary. And probably a really good teammate. Who knows? Well, he's a guy you want on your side, not against you, right? One of those guys?
Yeah, but he's a guy who is constantly on the move, and there's got to be a reason for that. And, you know, traded again today. And like you said, seven teams in 4 years. That seems like a guy who's, you know, maybe wears out his welcome a little bit, at least with organizations, because teams don't seem to want to keep him around.
Brandon Marsh with a home run. I love that guy. He might be my sneaky favorite player in baseball. And I have this weird addiction to watching Philly games right now.
Well, I
watch every single one.
Your love for Jason Worth, you just must like guys that look like him, right? He's got the long hair.
Did you hear him on Pardon My Take?
Jason Worth?
Yeah, he was on yesterday. Listen to it. It's one of the best listens you'll ever hear.
Brandon Marsh is a Jason Worth lookalike, and he's both in a Philly jersey.
And so is Trey Turner, and so is Bryce Harper. I think they're a perfect example of a team with horses that plays the game the right way. They're playing for each other. They play good, fundamentally sound baseball, and they got a lot of talent.
Okay, so to go back to something you were talking about earlier, discussing the Giants' plans at the deadline, you said it's not that crazy. This Giants team just plays baseball the right way. The final 54 games, they just play the right way. They quit the stupid mistakes. They don't let balls drop in the outfield. They hold runners on at first base. Maybe they are a little bit more aggressive on the base paths themselves. They swing at more strikes. They're better approaches at the plate. You just do the small things right, and this team, it wouldn't be shocking to see them make the postseason. So if you feel that way, then I mean, this team shouldn't really have to go out and do anything tomorrow to be able to achieve that. This is just all within their own power.
This is why I wouldn't be disappointed if nothing happens. Because I think that the way the roster is assembled, the way they're playing, and you said you had a really fair point about it hasn't happened in 108 games, but they didn't have Blake Snell like this for 108 games. They didn't have Robbie Ray. They didn't have Tyler Fitzgerald.
A lot of these things don't have anything to do with the pitchers, though.
Everything else. Yeah, they didn't. They weren't playing like this, and it was a different team than it is right now today as we speak. for the first 108 games. Their biggest hole, their biggest weakness was shortstop. That's been shored up with Tyler Fitzgerald. Now you got a lefty that throws 98 that just came back, and after he got over the nerves and first inning shoved against one of the best lineups in the National League, now you got a guy that's looking like a Cy Young Award winner all of a sudden. And if you get Cobb back, and you got Birdsong, who wasn't here for the first 108 games, like, this is a different team. You got Jordan Hicks in the bullpen. He wasn't a starter. He wanted to be a starter. They tried him out. It didn't work. He got tired. Now he can come in and blow it out and throw 97, 98 for an inning. He could be your setup guy. Like, this is a different team, the way it's constructed right now, than it was the first 108 games. So you already have some acquisitions with Fitzgerald at shortstop, with Ray, with Cobb coming back, with Hicks going to the bullpen. This is a different ball club than it was the first 108 games. That's why I think if they just play good baseball, they're going to be flirting with that third spot in October, and I wouldn't be shocked if they make the playoffs.
Yeah, 85 wins, and I know you can only worry about tomorrow and try to go 1-0 tomorrow and all the rest of the FP-isms, but when you look at it from a bigger picture, you could see 32-22 if they do the things that you're talking about, just play better baseball. The team right now, the roster, looks better than it did in April, and you've figured some things out. Shortstop is a great example where you've got a guy now who you can put out there, guy who's hitting a ton, and he can be your shortstop. You don't have to worry about that anymore.
I want that jolt, though, to walk into the room. I think that would be cool. They need a jolt.
So, yeah, okay.
That would be cool. I don't care how it happens, but like to Ned Coletti's point when he was on the show earlier, that does... We were in the wild card in Montreal one year. We were one game back, and we thought we were going to do something at the trade deadline, and we didn't. And there was a lot of dejected faces in the clubhouse because we didn't... We just like, oh, we must not care. We're not trying. And if you don't do anything, that can leave a certain taste. So I think it would be cool. I think if they stand pat with the roster, they still have a chance. But it would be cool for the guys, not for us as fans, but for the guys to have somebody walk in that door that you're like, oh, we're trying. Okay, let's go. Giddy up.
I guess you could kind of interpret it in a couple of different ways, though. And maybe it's how the team feels about themselves in this moment. But if you don't go out and make a move, isn't that also kind of a vote of confidence? Like, we believe in the guys we got right now, that you're good enough to go out and get us into the postseason?
Yeah, I think they're fine as is. You hear the quotes right now from Alex Cobb and Sean Jelly. And
Chapman yesterday, Chapman. We're good enough.
We're good enough. They believe it. They wouldn't be saying that out loud. And they're not trying to speak it into existence. They literally believe that because they're seeing how they're playing. They're looking around the room and they know... They all know how valuable pitching is. And all of a sudden, they got pitching. They just got pitching. They had two lefties to throw 98. Like, those don't grow on trees. They got number one in the Cy Young last year. They got a former Cy Young. And they got a guy that finished number two in the Cy Young last year. Those are their three starters in a five-game series. So good luck. And then now you got a guy.
Plus Alex Cobb coming back, who was an all-star last year.
So, I mean,
Kyle Harrison, who's pitching really well.
It just depends on your perspective of things. I'm not trying to be a homer or paint some kind of pitcher that ain't there. But this isn't a bad team. This isn't right now as we speak. There were times this year I was like, oof, 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 oof.
I mean, that's the Dodgers series just a week ago.
Oof. Even this, yeah, some things that were happening in Colorado, but not they swept is great. That they have that relaxed, confident feeling now is great. But this is a different team. It's a different team. It's a different vibe. This starting rotation isn't an opener. It was yesterday because they moved Hicks to the bullpen. But that's not how it's going to be. You got some horses now. You're going to be in every game with horses. As long as you catch a ball behind them, which I don't think that's asking a lot.
They've won four games in a row before. This is their third four-game winning streak of the season. They haven't ever won five in a row. Do you think the vibe is better than it's been at any point this season?
They wouldn't be saying the things they're saying publicly if it wasn't. And, you know, when you're in a clubhouse long enough, you know that it doesn't matter who you beat. It's just that you're celebrating. And it gets to be like an addictive thing where in Oakland, when we won 102 games, we had this song One More Time by Daft Punk that we played in the clubhouse after every game. And we wanted to hear that damn song. And we came through the line and we'd come up the stairs in the Coliseum into the clubhouse. And we were hearing Daft Punk. That was like reinforcing that we won and we're drinking beers and we're laughing and there's music playing and we're cranking it. And so we wanted to hear that song. You'd be in the middle of the game thinking about, we want to hear that song when we go in the clubhouse. And we'd walk through the door and guys are like, play that effing song. And they'd turn it on. And then, so it becomes a thing where you get conditioned to win. It's the Pavlovian response. Like when the bell rings, the dog slobber. I mean, same thing. Like you go out in the game, it's a seventh inning, you flip the switch, we're going to win because we want to hear that song. We want to go out tonight. We want to party after the game. We don't have to tiptoe around the clubhouse. We don't have to worry about what we say on the bus or how we act on the plane. Anything goes when you win at the highest level. There's no rules. As long as you're winning, it's the funnest thing you've ever experienced. It's the best drug. If anybody's ever, I don't do drugs. If you do drugs, it's the best drug you can ever possibly take is being at the highest level. There's nowhere else to get called up to, and you're winning baseball games. And it doesn't, we didn't care if we were beating the worst team in the league, the best team in the league. We just wanted to hear that song and keep winning.
We do have a little bit of news. There was a trade made for a starting pitcher just now. Let me pull it up. This is from Jeff Passan of ESPN. The Houston Astros have acquired left-handed pitcher Yusei Kikuchi from the Toronto Blue Jays, sources tell ESPN. So the Astros jumping in on the action at the trade deadline. They acquire a left-handed starting pitcher. That's important because he was on the tier below. There's a decent amount of starting pitchers who could potentially be available. I know there's some aces like Garrett Crochet of the White Sox, Tarek Skubal of the Tigers. I don't know why the Tigers would ever consider trading the guy who's maybe the best pitcher in all of baseball right now. Blake Snell is in that category. Jack Flaherty is also up there, but the Houston Astros have acquired Yusei Kikuchi from the Toronto Blue Jays, previously with the Mariners. Quality pitcher, but not in that top tier, but a little bit of movement in the pitching market as Kikuchi is now a Houston Astro, as the Astros are beefing up their chase for October. Of course, they've had a number of injuries to their starting pitchers all season long. They get a quality left-handed starter from the Toronto Blue Jays, and we'll see if this market continues to churn as we move forward. All right, time for a break here on Willard and Dibs. When we come back, we got a long segment for you coming up. We'll dive more into everything Giants related. Josh in San Francisco, I see you on hold. We're coming to you on the other side. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full service banking with no compromises. More Willard and Dibs with FP and Grandy alongside Dibs here on 95.7 The Game.